activist show, and I'm your weaver of context, Caroline Casey. So thanks just to Mitch Jezeritz handing the baton. Really great. Fun drive is a sacred thing. That is absolutely the great attitude. We are protecting all life radio. And I'm about to bring in my splendid guests reporting in from Mexico in a moment. But first, as a natural segue from last 2 weeks' shows, Diane Wilson protecting Lavaca Bay. She's on her 37th day of hunger strike to stop the dredging project that would destroy the entire ecosystem of East Texas. And again, in many ways you can support her. It's on coyotenetworknews.com. And last week from Martin Lee, as he announced on the show, Project CBD is launching Pet Docs, Launch Veterinary Cannabis Society. Okay, all about protecting life and enhancing life. So we are in Fun Drive. A brief announcement before we dive into our crucial show. 1-800-439-5732. And there are many enticements to pledge. I'm very fond of the emergency solar crank radio for a pledge of $200 or $20 a month. I'm fond of the emergency kit, which is a solar crank radio portable personal water filter for a pledge of $300 or $30 a month, all by pledging kpfa.org or calling 1-800-439-5732. There we go. All right. So, more than perfectly, our theme always, you know, is beauty versus cruelty. We're betting on beauty. We welcome from Mexico, Ellen Sharp and Joel Moreno to file scouting reports on the plight of monarch butterflies and the indigenous communities. And there's so many colleagues you both have that I'm going to connect you with in a moment. As with Bonobo Conservation, Sally Cox, who started that, and she said that she knew that to save the bonobos in the Congo, she had to save the villagers and create sustainable jobs. And so it is with these wonderful allies. To save the monarchs, we want to save the people and offer people sustainable jobs of stewardship. Tis all one story. Everything is calling us to join with Ellen and Joel, dedicating to beauty, partnering with what we love. And the moon's image, just for the fun right now, is woman and man give rousing speech on behalf of the earth. And so here they are. Welcome, Ellen Sharp and Joel Moreno. Welcome. Hello? Yes. Are you there? Ellen and Joel? Uh-oh. I hear water. I hear water. Are you there? Oh, great. Board up. Rod, are they connected? I can keep going. Okay. All right. That's good. So Ellen says, you know, some argue that we need to save monarchs because they're economically important pollinators, but these wispy creatures are nowhere near as efficient as the chunky-legged bee or stolidly snouted bat. No. The reason to fight for the survival of the monarch migration lies in the realm of the spiritual and the aesthetic, to preserve for posterity a world where things of astoundingly awesome beauty can continue to exist. So I love the thread of how this happened, and we'll aspire to reconnect with our guests in Mexico doing noble work that we'll report on. But it's a shout out to my great ally Evangeline Mon in Minnesota, protecting the sustainablemonarch.org is part of the Minnesota thing. It was a long thread, right, about, you know, we're in the early stages of working with an indigenous community in Minnesota. I think there could be significant synergies between the two groups to get the press coverage needed to create positive change. Yeah, we'll be reporting on an urgency as habitat is being destroyed for the monarchs. And it's very much like Dion Fortune, you know, in World War II, she said, people keep asking, when will the war end? And she said, can't tell you when, I will tell you how. It will end when the conditions that gave rise to it are resolved. When will the pandemic end? It will end when the conditions that gave rise to it are resolved. And it's the destruction of habitat, really, you know, and that is the cause of so much. And it's the restoration of habitat that, you know, is the solution. So much from Ellen's website and butterfliesandtheirpeople.org, also ellensharp.com. And she says, there's logging to the Monarch Butterfly Biosphere Reserve. Only the reserve or the commissioner of AIDO can report logging to Profera, Mexico's forest police. And they haven't followed up on any reports. She's delineating, you know, that in COVID, you know, where there's less protection, there's more ravaging. You know, all stories lead us to all stories. So it's the destruction of the forests that the monarchs need. She says La Gunita had already been badly hit by clandestine loggers when the pandemic started, and when the monarchs arrived in the fall of 2020, successive waves tried and failed to establish a colony here. The forest cover was already too thin to protect them. As we will honor from her reporting, you know, monarch population has decreased 90% in the last 20 years. This additional logging, you know, guarantees that this site, one of a handful of roosting sites on Cerro Pelon, has been extinguished. They have several urgent requests. One, to establish a complaint line. We'll get into this, I hope, when, you know, the dismal count from Western monarch migration overwintering sites suggest that one of North America's monarch migrations has already disappeared. Now, this is something, you know, when we look at the world and also KPFA's dedication and the Visionary Activist Show's dedication, you know, when things are gone, they're gone. You know, Diane Wilson, you know, protecting Lavaca Bay, you know, when it's dredged and gone with its dump, you know, the proposed dumping of mercury toxic effluent on sea turtles and oysters and the dredging of the bay that she's been working and so many people have been working to bring back, when it's gone, it's gone. When these migrations are gone, they're gone. So this is a neck and neck, again, beauty versus cruelty. We're betting on beauty, kind of a dynamic. And Ellen says, the butterflies I saw that late November day had just completed a 3,000-mile-long journey from us, far away as Canada, gliding in the thermals with hawks before funneling down to a tiny area of Mexico's transvolcanic range to wait out the winter. Ah, Ellen, are you there?
Hi, we are. Can you hear us?
Yes, that's wonderful.
Hello, so here too. We're both here.
That's really, really great. So you fell in love with monarchs and you fell in love with each other.
At the same time, for me. I think Coelho's already in love with monarchs, but yes, for me it all happened on the same day.
I think that's the best. I think love to protect beauty is absolutely the best, and I just want to thank you all. And so, yes, as you can guide us to your love, both of your love of the monarchs, and as I said before we were connected, you know, it is so wise. It's like the bonobo conservation said, you know, they realized to save the bonobos in the Congo, they had to save the villagers and create new jobs. And
exactly.
That's so much in the PDF of yours that I've read. So you're working with the community to create jobs of stewardship rather than ravaging, yes?
Yes, we are. Well, actually, Dad had a job as a forest ranger for almost 40 years. There were forest rangers in our side of the forest, and we can see the huge difference that made to the quality of the forest that's on our side of the sanctuary, and the huge difference it made to the families who had a regular paycheck. They were one of three people in a community of, you know, almost 2,000 people that had a regular job and a pension and benefits. It's extremely rare where we live. It just made a huge difference in both those counts. So it was really, the idea came from that, to start Butterflies and Their People. And now we have 6 full-time forest workers who go up there every day and are patrolling the forest and trying to keep the trees in the ground. And it was working pretty well until the pandemic, because that's really hurt the communities around us a lot economically. And sent a lot of people home who had jobs in other places.
Right. So feel free to, and both of you feel free to jump in and go anywhere you want to at any time. It's a democratic show. But you know, I got the wonderful thread from my great ally in Minnesota, Evangeline from Minnesota, and then she was connecting me to the Minnesota Monarch Group, and then they were connecting me to you both. Right. So I love this collaborative dynamic, and so very much, you know. Do relate to our dedicated listenership, right? We have really dedicated listeners who are eager to help, and who, you know, to protect beauty and to protect the environment. So delineate why the pandemic, because nobody was watching, and then an increased ravaging of the trees. Is that how that came about?
Oh, what happened when the pandemic comes, you know, like most of the people that went to work in the Mexico City or other cities, you know, they came back to the towns, and there is no jobs there, you know, and the only thing they do, you know, they go to the forest and cut trees. So, right. Yeah, the pandemic is not, it didn't help at all.
Put a lot more pressure on the forest than there had been, since there wasn't migration for work anymore. I think there are people going to Cancun. We had people, I think, deported from the United States too, and there are just really no jobs in the areas around the Monarch Butterfly Sanctuaries. That's just a huge problem, that we really need jobs in our communities. They're extremely rural. They're extremely cut off. Our community doesn't even have cell phone service or Wi-Fi, so that really limits people's, you know, connections to the world and the kinds of jobs that they can do too, or the kind of education that they get.
And it is also like, you know, we all want to connect all good-hearted people like you and Joel. I will connect you to the bonobo conservation thing, because what they did, and they're struggling and working hard like you both, but they said, that the villagers were killing bonobos for bushmeat, right? And so they mm-hmm. had to find restore ferry service so the villagers could bring their vegetables to market and find other jobs. And then they got grants, and we want to connect you to that too, to start a university, a school of stewardship. So they did, and then they got bicycles from around America, which they donated, and they go, "Who's your friend?" And they were like, "The environmentalists are our friend." Anyway, so we want to, you know, going, all right, because so now, yeah. You know, attention.
I think there are a lot of inspiring things happen in Africa, yes, with conservation. I've heard also about chimpanzees. People have talked to us or about apes, and just what's been done to include the community in the tourism. And I think that's part of, like, when we met, Howell was in this incredibly beautiful village, but there was no tourist infrastructure and no one stayed there. So that the first thing project that we did was starting a V&B and eco-tour service, because people were just passing through on big tour buses, but no one actually stayed there. So we've been trying to attract more people for longer, create more activities for them. Before the pandemic, we were trying to figure out ways to attract people year-round, so it wasn't just a brief 4 or 5 month butterfly season that visitors were coming, but the rest of the year to do things like horseback riding or mushroom foraging or bird watching, because we do live in this incredibly beautiful place. It's, you know, the upside of its remoteness is that 5 minutes from our door, you're in forest. It's really beautiful.
So if people want to support your efforts and or visit and connect with other groups, is the best website butterfliesandtheirpeople.org?
That's the best one for our nonprofit work, definitely. And actually, you know, I check all of the emails. So if you email me there, if you are interested in visiting as well, that the B&B website is jmbutterflybnb.com.
Oh, yeah.
If you want to visit. And then Butterflies and Their People, there are buttons there. We have a GoFundMe. There's PayPal also for making a donation. And all of the money that's donated goes directly to paying the salaries of the forest workers. And actually, since the PDF that you saw about my description of this latest forest crisis, which was just especially heartbreaking to me, and I hope to other people, because the site that was destroyed was the original site. It was the one where they discovered them. or discovered. Who else can you object to discovered? confirmed
the
migration.
Confirmed the migration.
Yeah.
But you know, like what I want to say, you know, is a lot of people, they care about the butterflies, but you know, the butterflies are here a short time, you know, like 3 or 4 months, but and the butterflies live, and it seems like the people, they care for the butterflies, they live with the butterflies. So the forest is alone, or it was alone for most of the time, you know. So that's what it's something that's been, they bothers me a little bit. They like all those people, they claim they do a lot of things for butterflies. Why can't they help us to protect the butterflies' home, you know,
because, year round?
Yeah,
yes.
Because you know, like maybe the butterflies come and it's a tree and the butterflies leave and somebody cut the tree, you know, it's like, and they coming back and there's no tree, where are they going to leave? It's like you know, like my uncle told me one time, you know, like how will you feel if you're going on a trip and you leave your house intact and when you come back it's no home, so what are you going to do? And I was like, I think that was really smart from my uncle, you know, they say that, you know, it's like, yeah, he's right. We had to protect this forest, and I don't know, like, I would like to, or like those people, the ones they say, with the things for the butterflies, they should like pay more attention all year round what's going on here in Mexico.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
And asking for what you could do, sorry.
No, no, you go.
We are planning. Yeah, we're planning. I guess, you know, are sort of trying to get the word out and trying to move decision makers to care has been really kind of very challenging. So we're actually trying something different because we know we meet 1,000 people each year who come and have what is hopefully a transformative experience seeing millions of monarch butterflies in one place. There's really nothing quite like this experience of seeing so many in one location. And just like the energy of that spot, the sound of their wings flying all at the same time, the entire journey up through this relatively pristine forest that's about an hour and a half to 2 hours to reach where the colony is, it's just incredible. And I would just hate for that not to be available for future generations, for other people to have this kind of experience. So I want to mobilize people who either, you know, have come to see this and really care about it, or are involved with monarchs in other ways, or care about nature in other ways, or think that they might like to come see this in their life. We're planning an action probably in mid-June after the solstice one thing, we're going to start small with some, like, hopefully goals that we can meet. One of it will be to get a cell phone tower built in our town so that people can actually have service, so that kids, you know, can do their online school, which they haven't been able to do, so that our neighbors can make appointments for their vaccinations, which are only online in Mexico. There have been all kinds of things coming up with the pandemic that have really made not being online really tragic, or not having cell phone service, being so cut off. It's just been really underscored by all of this. And what's also especially ironic or infuriating for us is that the telecommunications monopoly of Mexico is the corporate sponsor of the Monarch Butterfly Biosphere Reserve. So people are given, you know, free jackets with their logo on it, but we don't actually receive their service.
Huh. And then just because I can hear some listener going, but it won't the cell phone tower damage the butterflies? I'm receiving a telepathic message.
I don't think because I think, you know, this is even... I think even for people who are doing clandestine logging, if they could call and get a higher price for each tree that they're taking, we would be better off. Part of the problem is that people are so removed and don't have options and are disconnected that I think, you know, exacerbates the sort of economic depression that we live in. You know, the year of school that children lost. Like, I think, you know, having kids who aren't able to get online, you know, it's going to be hard for them to find well-paying jobs or jobs at all in the future. So, yeah, I don't think so. I think it would help.
No, that's great. I know, I'm with you. I could just
obviously
hear
it's a double-edged sword.
There
are a lot of things about being online that, yeah, that are not good.
Right.
You know.
No.
The disadvantages.
Right. No, that's a good balance. I mean, the wedding.
I mean, yeah, we live in a place we can't even call 911. Right? We can't call 911 where we live. We can't call and report for logging. We can't even tell people what's happening.
Right. So technology and service. I like Sir Herbert Reed saying only those serving an apprenticeship to nature can be trusted with technology. So by that measure, you and Joel get a cell phone tower. Because you're serving an apprenticeship to nature. So we go, that's really good. And then also, you know, at Bioneers Conference, where maybe you both will present one time when we have conferences again, it's a great connecting place. But Google Earth, and we go, oh, Google. But Google Earth was being used by indigenous people in the Amazon to protect, because they could see what was going on, and they could see the loggers moving. And so, again, yeah. Technology and service to the environment. Yes.
So how can we encourage... I would love to talk to Google Earth and have more frequent photographs taken so we can just actually document more closely what's actually happening.
Right. Yes. Well, the PDF, which I will post...
Because actually getting numbers on the logging is hard.
Say that again?
Just actually getting accurate numbers of the logging that's actually happening is hard, and something like a more frequent, you know, documentation, Google Earth photos would be helpful.
Yes. Well, this is activist radio, meaning, you know, it's not just on the air. We're on the air now, and then we want to set up all kinds of webs to support you and Joel's work, and go, okay, and how could we connect you to Google Earth? Anybody listening from Google Earth, we would like to connect you now, and likewise the bonobo people. So could you put up a cell phone tower by the end of this show? That would be really great. Okay, we want to, just putting out there. So the action end of June for a cell phone tower, how can we support that, and what does that look like a little more?
I think we're planning in late May to work with a core group of organizers who will reach out to more people. And I think kind of like a phone bank, we'll probably do a Zoom meeting after the solstice. I think it would be June 23rd, June 24th. So we just want to have emails and phone calls to, you know, the decision makers who have the power to build this or to fund this. There will probably be a parallel action for the community that's doing most of the logging, that's doing the most damage right now, because I think they're just really, people are really desperate there, and they really need some other form of jobs. And we need to talk to more members of that community. It's pretty far from us. It's the other side of the mountain, but just what would be helpful to them? Like, do they want, greenhouses? Do they want the jobs patrolling the forest? Like, what kind of economic development would really meet people's needs there? Because clearly their needs are not being met right now.
Right. And it is part of the only way to go. I mean, the work that you and Joel are doing, it's like E.O. Wilson some years back said, you know, we could save the earth and resolve almost all human poverty, because by incorporating what you're doing to create jobs of stewardship and women's education. Mm-hmm. Because, you know, I think he said $1 billion, which is like nothing. It's like one day of war. You know, we could do all this. And so, you know, it's against all odds, but you live in love in the jungle. You like against all odds, right? Trickster ingenuity in nature likes against all odds. Therefore, we can do it. And it is all. And see, even the way that I got connected to you, and then you get to connect with our audience, and on and on and on, you know, was darling. Again, my friend then connecting to Minnesota, connecting to you, and we go, right, these migrational networks, all dedicated to the monarchs, and, you know, again, up here in the north in little ways, but again, the Minnesota people and Evangeline know far more, but it's like planting milkwood and milkweed and no pesticides. But it is an issue everywhere. You know, I live in a neighborhood that used to be funky and wild, and now it's not, you know. And so the neighbors go, oh, we're getting our lawn sprayed by Mosquito Joe. And I'm like, you know, it's not toxic. And look it up, and it is. It's pyrethrins, right? And it goes, this kills all butterflies. Yeah. This kills all bees. And if the bees go back to the hives, it will kill the hive. So I just put a very polite little note, you know, going, did you know? It's meant as an offering, not a neighborly attack, you know. Right, so you know about pyrethrins and all
of
that.
You guys are in Neonix. Since you guys are in California too, I just, I wanted to mention the Western migration this year and just the heartbreak where it seems like, where the people, 100 volunteers went and counted 1,914 butterflies this year after there had been millions of them, a few decades ago. It was just really, really heartbreaking. And for that whole discussion of what happens and what people can do, I guess what concerns me is looking at our situation is how little I see the habitat that is their overwintering grounds really discussed and the quality of that habitat. Because I know that I think California has even different kinds of challenges, but perhaps even more severe challenges than Mexico for protecting their overwintering grounds just because real estate prices are so much higher and we were already in a pretty remote area. And I guess my question would be for what happened to that migration, like really looking at the quality of the overwintering grounds and not just that when milkweed is available, that's clearly important too, but that the migrating monarchs spend more of their life cycle and they're more vulnerable during this overwintering period when they're concentrated on a very small area. So I think I would just, for both migrations or for the one migration that we still have, really see more attention focused on the quality of trees and habitat and its protection of their overwintering grounds. Because I often, planting milkweed is wonderful, it's completely necessary, but I just want to make sure we don't forget the other end of this conversation of like where they're going and where they're going to be for 4 to 5 months.
Right. No, and it is, it's like over and over these sort of large, simple principles that, altruism is self-interest. This is good for all of us. It's good for all of us. And to spiral forth your dedicated work, because as I said when we were trying to reconnect with you too, but just from your great websites and your PDF, and I'll be posting those and sending those out. So already you and the monarch butterflies, are now having a Twitter account and Facebook, we're going to spread it all out. And the butterflies are like, yes, give us the microphone, and we will. So
something will a live webcam someday. That's our hope. Live webcam.
Oh, okay.
Butterfly cam.
A live webcam.
Yeah.
Well, that would be kind of like Google Earth.
We need signal. Yeah.
Yeah, we need signal. Yeah. We need a permit because, whatever we have to do, you need a permit.
Well, we're putting the intention out there.
Right. Yeah, I haven't been to Mexico in a very long time, but we have lots of listeners in Mexico and lots of environmental activists in Mexico who've been guests on this show who didn't know about your plight, right? But now they do, right? So again, we're weaving everybody with a kind of synchronicity dynamic, and we go, okay, we want to see the cell phone tower, and just another person I want to connect you with. We can do this, backstage as well, but this wonderful woman, Lily Ye, who goes to difficult places to create beauty. But when she went to a sad, sad village of survivors in Africa, and then brought them alive with art, and so the kids started to, they painted a cow on the building, and then somebody gave them a cow, and they're like, okay. And then they painted images of solar panels. And Lily said, all right, well, let's get them solar panels. And then this village began to manufacture their own solar panels, right? So it's like, first we see it on radio, then we draw a painting of the cell phone tower, then somebody builds you a cell phone tower, and then, it's all, to and fro in this, miracle neck and neck kind of dynamic. But, and I love, I'm sorry, say what?
Yes. Sounds good. So, I'm just reading for a lesson plan for the kids.
It's that idea of conjuring magic. Once they could see it, and I'll connect you to Lily Ye. I'm making furious notes in my margin here of all kinds of connections to make. Because she also does against all odds impossible things, right? And but she really liked that once the kids, she said it was the children that she could work with first. This is Survivor Village where people had lost, and they were in deep grief, But the kids came out first. And again, just they painted the cow. Somebody gave them a cow. They painted the solar panels. And then they began, yes, this saddest place manufactures their own solar panels, this little village. And we go, right. So we love these against all odds. And I guess...
I think people should paint the jobs they want, right?
Yes, paint the jobs. And then also, and the monarch butterflies everywhere. And so you had said, you know, that 90% of the population of monarch butterflies has declined over the last 20 years. So...
Yeah, for the eastern migration and 99.9 for the western migration. Yes.
So again, your butterfly friends who still come, but you said the population is down on that as well, and now their wintering site is.
Yeah, this is a very small population year for us too. It was definitely we saw fewer butterflies than usual this year. Our colony was pretty small. So, yeah, it's very worrisome. And especially after seeing the numbers coming out of California, like, oh, no, this could, you know, we're seeing what could happen here. And if people can't stop it in California, it's like, how are we going to stop it here?
Right.
So it was really a wake-up call.
Right. And may wonder attract synchronicity. We wonder how people can wake up again, because so much, you know, the also allies who are dedicated to the whales and the gray whales, and again, populations down, everything. So it is all one story of like, can we compost this cruelty into nutrient for culture of reverent ingenuity? And and you do still have 6 employees, right? I mean, so what are that you're,
we do,
that,
yes. You're,
and
we had an interesting year because we were shut down for the pandemic, which was really hard for all the people we worked with indirectly. But you know, normally we employed probably 12 to 14 people directly, but we were able to keep our core crew of people. We produced virtual butterfly experiences. There's a tab actually on both of our websites, on butterfliesandtheirpeople.org and jmbutterflybnb.com. There's the description of, it's called Adopt a Colony. And 15% of what we earn from that, too, is going back into paying the forest protectors as well. So we've produced a virtual tour. We did 2 each month. It was really an incredible workload, but it was a lot of fun. And then on the other side of that, it really allowed us to closely document what the colony was doing and how climate change was affecting them and how deforestation affected them, because we just had much better and closer documentation than we would have if we had been leading groups of people up every day. We would have been paying more attention to the people than we were to just the colony. So that was both like a privilege and alarming, you know, to see the colony that we've just seen, I think, extinguished, because it was already really struggling to hold on. The butterflies couldn't establish a colony there, and now there's more logging there.
Right. And as you said, illegal loggers are only paid $15 to $20 per tree. So it's not
I think that's... Yeah, no, it's not even that much.
Right, and then just to toss to both of you we're good. We've got another 7 minutes. We can load up with that. But let me toss to both of you and see if this resonates. So one of the themes we've been working with, you know, is to protect water. Become like water, you know, the strategy of water. To protect wolves, become more like wolves. To protect monarchs, become more like monarchs. What do you and Joel admire about the monarchs? What quality do they have that they might want to hum in you both and those you influence to be more like them, to protect them? I mean, they fly 3,000 miles. That's pretty good.
Yes.
Well,
Joanna,
no, butterflies, they're beautiful. I think that's what it is. You know, they're beautiful, and it's amazing, you know, what they do. You know, traveling, like going to Canada and all this. How do you call that?
The multi-generations, the metamorphosis?
Yeah, metamorphosis. Yeah, how does that It's
the life cycle of the monarch
the
itself
cycle,
is inspiring.
Yes, all the stuff.
I would say about them is just how collective they are, especially once they're in Mexico. Their behavior is entirely about protecting the entire colony as this sort of superorganism. They, you know, they're in these clusters that are warmest in the middle, and if there's bad weather, the ones on the outside, you know, are protecting the ones on the inside. They're at more risk, but they alternate positions in the cluster. They change positions on a tree trunk, like that they're all, it doesn't really feel like you're seeing one butterfly. It seems like they're all moving together. And that kind of, you know, I would say the collective organizing of monarch butterflies is what I want to take inspiration from that too.
No, that's great.
Apart from their constant rebirth, right? Their constant life cycle, that it's not one individual, but that they are constantly reborn.
Right. So and continuity. That's right. And it's like an humans killing what they need. Whatever we humans do to nature, we're doing to our own communities, and then vice versa. So the constant. So yes, and I just want to put more up, because you began as an anthropologist, a poetic anthropologist, right?
Yes. Well, I like that. That wasn't officially my title, but I'll take it.
And I like that,
so
poetic anthropologist. Cultural anthropologist. That's a good cover. And Joel, how did you meet Ellen, and what were you doing then and transitioning to now?
Oh, wow. I was working for another hotel doing tours when Ellen came to see the butterfly, so I was the guide. So I took her to see butterflies, and yeah. We talk, and she came back.
Yeah.
Yes.
So that's what I was doing. And before that, you know, I guess that's why I'm able to speak a little bit of English, because I had to migrate, you know. I went to United States and spent some time there, and I came back home, and there was nothing there for me to do. So I was like kind of trying to figure it out how to make a living. And I guess I talked to Ellen, the idea that I have, you know, like renting rooms or something. I didn't even know what I want at that time, you know. I feel like I was kind of lost. But, you know, having the butterflies and there, I see it was like, I like to speak English sometimes, and I like to see people come to see the beauty, you know. So, I don't know. Ellen came with the idea too, you know, a year after we met, I guess, or maybe not
less.
Even a year.
I think it was less. I mean, that we met in November 2011. I made a website in July of 2012. Our first guest came in November of 2012. So, yeah, it started very small. We just had 3 or 4 rooms, a shared bathroom. It was very simple. And now we have 14, and they all have ensuite bathroom. And Joel built a swimming pool so he could learn how to swim. We built a yoga studio. We built a new restaurant that's like a lodge. Great. It's huge. It could fit hundreds of people. It's been empty, but, you know, we have the infrastructure now. And it all came from guests. It all came from butterfly guests, because neither of us, you know, had trust funds. It was all like what we earned each season. We would then invest in improving our facilities. And now I have to say, it's quite nice.
No, that's wonderful, and I think that's really inspiring. I think all friendships and love are best now when they're dedicated to something larger than themselves. And you're doing it. You're both doing it. That's really great. That is an inspiration. So jmbutterflybnb.com will get you.
I bought the website before I realized I would live there. So the JM is Joel's name, and then it was too late to change it because we were already in the guidebooks.
Okay, no, that's good. JM Butterfly,
BNB.com. BNB. Yeah.
Right, and And then Butterflies End, spelled A-N-D, butterfliesandtheirpeople.org. And then you have a beautiful website, also ellensharp.com, and the origin story, and then ways we can connect and ways we can all visualize the cell phone tower. So we've got, right, the cell phone tower is a good image. Here we go. What is the next thing that both of you would like to see and then to happen?
I guess just in general, re-envisioning the way that conservation is conceived of or done in our area, which is just to include the people who share the forest with the butterflies in their care. Yeah, I realized as I was talking about butterflies being collective, rural Mexicans by necessity are extremely collective, you know? People really help each other out because they have to. But, you know, we just need to give people jobs that are sustainable because I really feel like employing one person, you know, they are already helping so many other people, more than in a small nuclear family situation in the U.S. because we all live, you know, we were in a bubble of 26 people this year. It's very collective, you know, which is a blessing, I have to say, talking to people who are a little more isolated, you know, I didn't really feel it so much.
No, that's great. So the butterflies. Oh, sorry. Yes, Joel.
I would like to see more people coming to this place because it's beautiful. Cerro Pelon is really, really beautiful, you know. And I would like to have more people all year round, not just during the butterfly season. That helps the community, you know. I mean, like in the raining season, because, you know, now the raining season is really, really beautiful. We have a lot of mushrooms and
moss growing on top of moss.
Yeah. And also it's beautiful for hiking, you know, it's just to be in the forest. It's just, it just give you a different energy or, I don't know, the way to see life, you know, it's just different.
And I think rather than overwhelming, I don't want to build more rooms and have larger tours and take more people to see butterflies, because I think we're right at a nice point. Most of our tours are about anywhere from 10 to 20, 25 people, depending on the time of year. And that's nice. It's a nice group. You know, we have 14 rooms. We have 28 guests. That's perfect. I don't want to do like mega tours. Well, I don't. I really am happy with like that size. It's a good size because people actually meet each other, people make friends, people stay connected after they stay with us, and that's been really beautiful to watch. But to spread out those visits, yeah, throughout the year would be really wonderful and would be a huge help to our neighbors if they could, you know, depend upon tourism revenue, not just from November to March.
Right. This is community-based radio. We like to support communities all over, including yours, you know, 14 rooms, 28 guests. And then we just say, because you said you built a swimming pool and a yoga studio. Is that what you said?
Yes. Yoga studio is relatively unused so far. We're still looking for our yoga.
So we could say, because the dynamic listening audience is, you know, crazy about yoga up here. I'm in Washington, D.C. The audience is largely in California, but really all over and in Mexico, too. But it's like, come for the yoga, leave for the butterflies. There you go. You could have a 28-person seminar workshop. Well, we're just stirring things. We're stirring things up because you both are so dedicated and have been working in such a good way, and we like, you know, mutual aid, reciprocal support, you know, all who love the butterflies and the rainy season. And also, Joel, you said mushrooms, right? And we go, there's a lot of mycologists who go, mushroom season, what a good idea. You know, medicinal and culinary.
They're beautiful.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, that's also,
Well's mom has cooking classes. She has a lot of mushroom recipes.
Oh, you have cooking class. Okay, so come for the mushrooms, leave for the butterflies.
Yeah.
Come for the yoga, leave for the butterflies.
Right.
And also, you might want to magnetize, I think, a children's book in Spanish might be, in Spanish and English might be wonderful also. Because it's long term, but you both explain so well You know, and children do feel that kinship, and we do want, you know, your dedicated work, both of you, and then the information to, you know, spiral out there going, this is beauty is important, and all of our flora, fauna as well. So I'm going to reluctantly release you so that I can pitch for the radio station so we can stay on the air and continue to broadcast your story. We can even think of this as
part one.
Thank
you, though.
But if there's any
we'd be happy to come back.
Oh, good. No, absolutely.
Thank you so much. It's so fortuitous. I'm so glad. Yeah, that my plea reached you. That's just completely serendipitous and wonderful.
On butterfly wings.
What I say, you know, it doesn't feel like to have a job, you know, like what we do, it doesn't feel like we have to get up every day and go to work. It's just like, it feels good to do what we're doing, I think.
Yes.
It's true. It doesn't feel
exactly.
like
exactly. No, it's devotion. That is very, very wonderful. You're both tremendously inspiring. We want to be more like you and more like the monarch butterflies. And we will think of this as part one. And we will stay in touch in many ways. I'm happy to spiral forth whatever you want known. And we will connect you to many people engaged in related work. And, you know, and maybe in our listenership, people want to go stay in your... You'll be booked up for years.
Right.
You know... You know, because I just have to say, well, you hire more people. I just want to say one more thing. It's like, you know, in this pandemic, everything into the cauldron, right? But what are we going to ladle out? And so many ways of gathering, you know, really want to be more dedicated. It's like there's large music festivals and whatever, and it's like a party with a purpose. It's like, yes, have these gatherings in order to do good, in order to protect the forest, in order to support the indigenous people protecting the forest, like so that it's all, you know, when we gather, may it be for a good purpose to support the work of Joel and Ellen. Yes, sorry, there we go. And protecting beauty.
Yeah.
So thank you. Thank you both so much for your work, and we will be in touch, and we can think of this as part one. Alrighty.
Okay. Thank you so much, Caroline.
Yep. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Okay. And let me see if my pitching partner now we get to pitch for the station, right? Because it's by having this station and this show on that we can do Protect Life, that we can honor Diane Wilson on her 37th day of hunger strike to stop the project that would destroy her bay. You know, we can honor Martin Lee. We can honor the beautiful work of Ellen and Joel. And we can, you know, radio is really magic. We can we convene here, as we do, every week for 24 and a half years. Visionary Activist Show has been on the air as long as Democracy Now! But not every day. Oh, is that you, Chris?
Yes.
Oh, darling. Hello. How
yes.
Wonderful.
Oh, I want to go there.
Yes, yes. Let's all go there.
Yes.
No, it's really super. So, so yes. All right. Let me. You can figure out the computers more than me. My computer's not feeding the current. Whatever it is, anything us.
Oh. Let me go there.
All right, here we are. No, I figured it out. All right, there we go. It's the Chris and Caroline show. All right, so I will have the PDF of their beautiful Ellen and Ellen Sharp and Joel Moreno reporting on the plight of the monarch butterflies. But we can do this. And then I have a few favorite pledge enticements that as I was scrolling through, again, 1-800-439-5732. I didn't do anything. I've been waiting for Chris. So there is the Magical History Boat Tour for $500, a limited number of tickets available. Call now and see if it is. But it sounds pretty great. East Bay Yesterday host Liam O'Donohue on the evening of July 10th for a journey through centuries of Bay Area history and so on. The tour will cruise from Emeryville Marina out to the Berkeley Pier in Yerba Buena Island before heading down the Oakland Estuary. Intimacy with where we love. So that's the Magical History Boat Tour for a pledge of $500, limited number of tickets. Call now, step right up, 1-800-439-5732, or
I was
online.
I was thinking of Mayotte, listening to your folks there when I was in elementary school. Well, up until 16, we lived at the edge of the small town that we had moved into when I was in first grade. And slowly, it was being developed. Houses were being built across the street. But mostly there were these fields. This is Illinois, flat corn, pigs, you know, the horizon forever, and milkweed. And so there were always lots of monarch butterflies. And we used to go out there and pick milkweed and put it in a jar and put holes in the lid of the jar and watch the caterpillar build its chrysalis and turn into a butterfly. Every summer we did that over and over and over again. It never failed to amaze and astound. It was just so beautiful to watch that whole process.
And it is, I think, one of the primary dedications, really, of Pacifica, the goddess of peace, and of KPFA, and of the Visionary Activist Show, is right now, you know, to protect as much life as possible. That's many of our shows always, recently, and today's show, certainly, it's like, because when they're gone, they're gone. When they're gone, they're gone. Again...
That was awfully loud.
What was loud? What was that?
That was my... sorry, I thought I muted my mic when I hollered at my daughter. She's up in the kitchen dropping things on the floor.
Chris's daughter, right? And the dogs are howling. And this is extremely live radio. We're just completely frank. But I do want to... I realize we were mesmerizing and the work of Ellen and Joel was completely fascinating, so we really only got one call. Lori, thank you for pledging. All right, now we got to really do the Chris and Caroline show. We got to really make
well,
us look
now,
like...
I am looking. There's Florence in Oakland. Oh. Many thanks. I love Caroline Casey's show.
Oh.
There is Rosalie in Petaluma, who called to get the Letters in Politics U.S. History Collection. And there is Anonymous in Hercules. There is Anonymous in Santa Barbara.
Oh.
And Anonymous in Berkeley. So all of those people. And I don't know where you're getting Julie. I don't see her at all.
Lori. I was getting Lori.
Yeah.
I think I'm on some rogue site. I don't Lori from
I'm sure you would be.
All right. No, I don't. Okay, you do the thank you because mine is clearly defunct and I was looking.
Okay, well, where do you get these wonderful guests that you have on, Caroline?
Well, it's all fabulous. That's what I so like. It's a shout out to my friend Evangeline Moyne, an ally of many years. And she had mentioned on our Monday Trickster Council, you know, the plight of the monarch. She's been dedicated for years in Minnesota. And I go, oh, send me the thing. You know, maybe we'll do radio. And she goes, she sends me the long thread. And it's her to Minnesota monarchs, to other people, to these wonderful people in Mexico. And I go, hello, wonderful people in Mexico. Will you come on? Yes, we will. And great board op, Rod Akil, you know, skidded in and got them connected in Mexico on the internet, right, because there's no cell tower. There we go. So I get them by magic and community.
Exactly. Connection and community, which is magic. And it's what we nurture here at KPFA. And Caroline, for sure, that's her whole thing about weaving the context and the community together. That's what she does, has all the time, including the 24-plus years she's been on KPFA, but way beyond. And that's why people are drawn to listen. Because they're part of it. It's a community radio station. We are building community, empowering community, which is the only thing between us and devastation of all sorts. Believe me, it's just so clear right now.
Oof. Right. Well, again, beauty and danger, beauty and cruelty, beauty and dedication. And that's why it's so wonderful to have these dedicated people, Ellen and Joel, who are witnessing with great sorrow. They sent the PDF out, which again is posted on all the places I posted, you know, and coyotenetworknews.com, you know, just delineating, like, here's the devastation of the forest, right? Here's the trees that are cut down, and here's they're not even getting that much money for the trees. So it is all one thing going, this is, you know, we are dedicated, Pacifica Visionary Activist Show, to a culture of reverent ingenuity, going, all right, support the people who work there, give better jobs of stewardship, follow E.O. Wilson's, you know, dynamic. So yeah, absolutely. So we are offering enticements, you know. There's the magical history boat tour for $500, right? But I'm also and Laura Priebus, our dauntless leader.
Amen.
She suggested going, oh, but people can get a portable personal water filter where you can drink out of a puddle. I'm like, yes, that my team would like that. All right, so the two person emergency kit. Right. I like the two-person emergency kit. I see. I'm confused here. Excuse me. I will calm down. I think my audience would be up for a personal water filter where you can drink out of a puddle. And that is the emergency combo two-person emergency kit solar crank radio portable personal water filter. Oh, for a pledge of $500. What the hell? Or $50 a month. There you go. And then there's also the cheaper version for one person going, never mind anybody else. I'm out for me, right? Portable person water filter for hiking, camping, travel, and emergency preparedness for a pledge of $120 or $10 a month. I think that's charming. I'd go for that. And do you have personal? And then I love everything that Mitch Jesurich does, of course, too.
Yes.
So people can.
Well, and I'm my mind is very full of what's going on in the Middle East right now. And there's a wonderful offering from Phyllis Bennis, a wonderful book from Rashid Khalidi. Both of these people know everything about it. If you look, when you go online to kpfa.org, which are the indomitable Laura Priebus advises to just know what you come up with, you get to kpfa.org and then you go to the donate section, and there's the whole list of all of them, of all of the fund drives for this premium. They're just amazing. Just amazing. Jeff Chang and Davy D, the book that they've just done together for kids about racism and hip-hop. And then there's Obi Kaufman, whom I'm going to be talking to on Tuesday, I'm so happy to say. The Forests of California, the State of Water. Yeah, he's a perfect person for you. You'd just be bouncing off the walls there. Ram Dass and Aviva Chomsky and also, no matter what you offer, no matter what you donate to KPFA, everyone gets absolutely free this special audio offering for this fund drive only, entitled, we're calling it Telling the Story, which features Angela Davis on stage basically doing her audio autobiography. It's a fascinating story of how she came to be the activist and scholar that she is today. And then also a two-part interview by Jack Foley, who does the poetry program here on KPFA, with Al Young. Wonderful, wonderful. I don't know if you ever met him. Just the sweetest, most beamish man you ever saw. He was the poet laureate for California, and he died this about a month ago, actually. Wonderful interviews. Those are yours free. Whatever you give to KPFA, that will come to you. 1-800-439-5732. 1-800-439-KPFA, or online, which I highly recommend, at kpfa.org. It's everything. There's Central America, there's the Middle East, there's the forest, there's water, there's Palestine, there's philosophy, there's Ram Dass, and there is Caroline. And that's really what you're listening to. And support her and the station that's had her on all this time. We're so lucky. Oh, and there's interviews and poetry of Lawrence Ferlinghetti and Alan Watts, of course. The eternal Alan Watts.
And it is all one story. I mean, when you were saying yes, and the Palestinians, and that's why I did the sharp intake of breath, like, Right, yes, because it is all connected. Whatever we do to nature, we're doing to our human community, and the destruction of habitat, the removal of people from their homes. We can barely imagine the anguish, and therefore the kinship of people going, we're taking your home. Like, no, no, we're taking your home, Palestinian people and butterfly people. Oh, I hear the exit music. I have no idea how well we did because my donation dashboard is not cooperating, but I guess we did okay. Chris Welsh, yeah? We hope so. Oh, thank you, Chris. And thanks to Radha Keel. I'm Caroline Casey. We will reconvene next week. Woof, woof.